All right. Welcome to Wild West Filmmaking. I'm not even sure what number podcast this is, but it's probably on your device or computer, and it'll let you know. This is a special Wild West Filmmaking. We're really now like diving deep into not just directing and acting, but the music part, the symphonic part, the thing that is there that sometimes we don't even realize is there. We are here with St. Seraphim's Cathedral Choir Director, Christopher Reeves. Christopher, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's so wild. We've known each other for quite some time, and yep. I don't really know a lot of your backstory. Pieces from like you, your brothers, you know, your dad is obviously, you know, he's a legend in the Orthodox community and just life in general. I was actually in Austin, and we were promoting the movie and selling some tickets since we're going to be playing in Austin on October 13th. And somebody was talking to me about St. Seraphim, and they said how connected they were with your dad. I believe it was your dad who brought them into Orthodoxy, and they knew you guys, and it's just wild.
Yeah, actually, I do. I know a few who are down in Austin. I think I know the people you're talking about.
Valerie. Her name was Valerie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his name was Ethan. I'm horrible with names, and I apologize if you guys.
There's another family down there, the Groh's, Matt Groh, G R O H. But yeah, my dad. He did a lot in missionizing and evangelism and bringing people into Orthodoxy in a tiny little, you know, town in State College, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, let's just back it all up for me, for everybody listening. Mm-hmm. How'd you get to Texas? What was as far as back as you can remember, the lineage of like, where you guys started as a family, what y'all were doing, and then, you know, obviously present day.
Sure. So my family has been in Texas at least bits and parts since mid-1800s, late 1800s. And my mother's side and my father's side, classic story of big city girl from San Antonio meets small town country boy from Kerrville in the Hill Country. They get married, have four kids. My father was not Orthodox. Neither was my mother. My father went to seminary at Sewanee Theological Seminary in Tennessee, and even at that point, he was feeling disenfranchised with the Anglican world due to a lot of issues, but he just didn't feel that it was the true church. So he went on a journey looking for the true church. And I mean, it boiled down to either Catholicism or Orthodoxy. And that's when they were in Dallas at this time, and they met Archbishop Dimitri. And he essentially brought my whole family into the faith. Mother and father, my sister and older brother as well, Patrick and Elizabeth, were not Orthodox. They converted. They were very young, though, 6 and 5, maybe 4, when that happened. But all at the cathedral where we worship every Sunday in the old parish hall. And my dad worked with Archbishop Dimitri and was ordained a deacon and then a priest and was sent out on mission work and established the church in Far Texas, St. George, in 1981. And then what happened is my dad felt a calling for a new area, still for mission and evangelism. And there was a small mission parish in State College, Pennsylvania, home of Penn State University. And at that time, Patrick and Elizabeth were already in college. Dr. Nicholas and myself were still, you know, elementary, middle school, and packed up everything. We moved to Central Pennsylvania in 1996, 97, around that time, and stayed there. And my father built up that church into a very sizable congregation through evangelism, especially of college students, because you're talking late 90s, early 2000 college students, you know, dealing with postmodernism, Generation X, and people really just feeling lost and out of place. And he did a very good job of, you know, establishing discipline with, I guess, a whole generation that was just like, I don't need discipline. I don't need the man telling me to do anything, you know? Yeah. So that happens there. And then for me, coming back to Texas kind of took a circuitous route. I went to Penn State University, graduated from there in 2009 with a bachelor in religion, Bachelor of Arts in Religion. And then I moved to Columbus, Ohio for about 7 years, where I became the choir director at St. Gregory of Nyssa Orthodox Church in Columbus. And then my mother and father both retired. Dad was having some health issues, decided to move back to home, Texas. place we always wanted to be back in. And my father being more advanced age, my mom as well, they needed help. And I just really wasn't where I wanted to be in Columbus career-wise. And now almost all my family didn't even live close to me. So I had a brother, Patrick, living in Dallas. My parents moved here. So I moved back in August of 2019 is when I moved back and was back at St. Seraphim's, where my family, you know, started in the late 70s. So, you know, kind of a 50-year loop of starting there, moving away, and now back in it. But St. Seraphim's has always been a home for our family. But that's how I got to Texas. I am a Texan, came back. But Pennsylvania, or PA as we call it up there, is definitely another home for me. I spent 22 years in PA growing up, so I feel really strongly attached to there as well.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't know you came back in 2019. That's wild.
And so, right before the everything went crazy.
Oh. Yeah.
Literally months before.
Every time somebody mentions that, I'm always like, oh yeah, we had that thing that happened. Mm-hmm. And it, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we didn't see anybody at St. Seraphim for sure.
No.
So you're the youngest brother of the bunch. What was that like? Or did it seem natural, normal? What was that like growing up in a family of artists, musicians, in a place where like it's in a encouraged environment, I guess. I'm sure it was, right?
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. Especially with my older brothers, Patrick and Dr. Nicholas, who are church musicians themselves, choir directors. Dr. Nick especially went that route, you know, having a doctorate of music. The work that he does, it was always encouraged in our family to not necessarily be for arts or anything like that, but to be in ministry at church, where, you know, young parish priest dealing with a mission, all the kids are involved, mom's involved, everyone has to do something and be a part of something. So whether it was serving in the altar, or, you know, being phased out of that, I think, because frankly, my dad was done dealing with disciplining his kids. You know, once I was done at 12, it wasn't like, all right, you can now do whatever you want. It's like, nope, you're going to be in the choir because your sister sings, your older brothers sing, and you can sing as well. And so from about age 12, I've been in church choirs. But it was always very encouraging with my older brothers, especially in there. It was a good relationship, still is. And it's one of always trying to support not just each other, but help raise up the musicology and the, you know, the idea of Orthodox worship in the music itself. And so it's been, there are challenges to it, but at the end of the day, you know, it was a good nurturing environment for it, but also with an expectation of this is your duty because this is your ministry. So you have to take it very seriously, and you have to be grounded in everything that you do. And so it's been a very formative process in, you know, who I have become as a musician, definitely.
Yeah, it was like it was in your DNA. It was in your blood. It was like second nature. It's like growing up in the Manning family or something, you know, knowing you see the blitz.
Right.
It's so cool because, like, you know, my dad was a traveling evangelist and still is. And so nothing's farther from that than the Orthodox Church. So for me, it's like I'm unpacking, you know, 11 years in as I'm bringing things on. And it's like, even though, because it's a liturgical calendar, but you've had that, like, especially for a choir director to be able to, you know, turn on a spot, everything changes, even though it's all the same, but it's all different each feast day, or, I mean, it's coming at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And you do an incredible job. It seems very, I see sometimes you even doing some audibles, you know, going behind the holy doors and calling out some audibles back there, sometimes for some newer clergy at times.
There, yeah, and especially at a large, I mean, St. Seraphim's is huge, and it's getting larger, and our schedule of services, and we have a lot of clergy. And there was a site, you know, when our younger clergy took over, they're kind of learning in lockstep about how the services are and what's going on. And especially my role as, you know, director of music for the cathedral, there's also a liturgical aspect of that, of knowing and of kind of directing the flow of the service, because I get it from having a father who's a priest. You're praying, and there's also service going on, and you have to do this and this and this and this and kind of hit your cue, so to speak. And sometimes, and happens to me too, sometimes you forget, like, oh, it's my turn. And, you know, it's good to have that kind of, Bishop Yerasim calls it, you know, a protocol person or a liturgics person to be back there to help, like, this is happening now. Hey, we missed this, so we're just going to go to here. I mean, honestly, I describe this to all my directors and to the choirs as well, that, you know, the Orthodox service, whether it's liturgy, vespers, matins, and there's so many changing variables to it, but it is almost like divine theater, where the clergy are the actors, the choir is the orchestra, and the, you know, the congregation are the masses coming to partake in this. And your orchestra director, you've been in shows before as well, and, you know, the orchestra director is the one directing all the cues and everything, making sure that everything is syncing up, because, you know, once it's go time, the actual director of everything is not on stage or is not in the physical moment doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's there is a component there, but whatever makes services flow and feel immersive and don't have weird, awkward pauses. It's an interesting thing about Orthodox worship and service where Nick Periskevis, a former choir director, would always say, in Orthodoxy, you don't want unintentional silence. That's weird to us. That's very foreign to an Orthodox worship service where there's not supposed to be silence here and everyone can feel it. And people are looking around like, who's up? Is it your cue? Is it me? Is it you? So that's why, yeah, sometimes you see me behind the scenes running around doing that. And, you know, but that's a very different experience for someone from the non-Eastern world. Because we, in our services, we hit on all your senses, all of them.
Yeah.
You know, the smells and bells.
Yes.
And being
it's moving, too.
It is.
You're participating the entire time. Like somebody's taking a crying kid out or somebody's lighting a candle over here or there's a prostration that's happening. And it's like, I mean, I try to think back of how did I sit in a wooden pew and hear like back-to-back-to-back preachers. And it's wild because I think that transitioning for my kids, because my kids grew up in a non-denominational early on, and I was a little bit worried about, you know, there's no drop them off at kid entertainment time. It's they come with you. And that's really fascinating to see, I think, is to watch children grow. I mean, obviously in physical stature, but also like in just the liturgical service, how things that they were on the floor doing spins, trying to catch dust bunnies, you know, now they know when to stand up, you know, and they know, you know, it's really, yeah, it's a beautiful thing, I think, to see the controlled chaos, I guess, that's happening.
It is very managed.
Yeah, it's very, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And from now, born and raised Orthodox, my first experience, I mean, we don't go to other denomination churches, whatever, Protestant, we don't do that. That's actually, it's kind of forbidden. depends on who you talk to, but you know, it's one of those things of, for me, I had a total reverse culture shock of like what you did of going to my first Protestant service when I was 18 or 19 in a gospel choir in college. And for me, I'm just like, what is this? Why is it so quiet in here?
So alien.
I can hear everyone's footsteps. Where are the children? Yeah. Why does that guy in the front row have a trumpet and she has a tambourine? What is going on here? I'm not used to that. They're not in the band. They're not in the choir. They're just there to participate. So, you know, it's a definitely the reverse thing of where Orthodoxy is very, very managed chaos, but everyone seems to at least put on the airs of they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you said, someone's lighting a candle over here. Someone has a kid acting up over here. And then you have this person who might be standing and praying and it's, you know, zoned in. But that's everyone's form of prayer. There's not really one specific way.
Yeah. If anybody's never been to an Orthodox service and you love to people watch, it's the perfect place.
You can go and
check out some interesting folks. Okay. So what would you say was like your early inspiration? You can include mentorship if you want to, but like in music, and it could be family, church, teachers, or just some inspiration that hit you where you were like, this is my lane. This is my lane, you know?
So that happened. One of my earliest ones was being in high school choirs at State College there's one high school and one university. So you have all of the professors' kids going to this one school, which kind of ups the game on what the education level is and what the expectations are. State College Area High School has a long, rich history and tradition of very, very outstanding music programs, whether it's their marching bands, their orchestra, their regular bands, and their choir programs, which Dr. Nick did before me. And so I was always kind of following his footsteps and, you know, like he was in this choir and this choir and this elite choir. And, you know, I wanted to be in them as well. Typical brotherly, you know, competition and stuff like that. But one of my first ones was in the men's glee club at State High. The first half of the year we did music that our director chose, and then the second half of the year there was a competition to get student directors. It was actually really cool. So you auditioned, and then you would be able to have an ensemble created for you by the main director. His name, he's retired now, but Dr. Robert Drayfall. And he would let you pretty much choose whatever music you wanted to do. And so what was cool for me is I introduced some Orthodox music, but I had a men's choir, right? And in small parishes, that's very difficult to have enough talented men in the voice ranges that are needed to have a men's choir. Where here I am in high school, and I got all my tenors down to my low basses. So it was really cool of like, oh, I can play around with this, and you know, we'll actually perform this at a concert, and there will be live judges. And that was one of my first times of really being like, I kind of dig this director thing, because just putting the ingredients together and making the dish and then the dish being presented, you know. And it was a really, really cool experience to have for that first time, you know, at like 15 or 16, of like directing a group of people and it's sounding okay, you know. Not it wasn't the best thing in the world, trust me, but it wasn't bad.
Let's see here. Take it on the role. So now you are the St. Seraphim Cathedral Choir director. What was my question here? How have you built on your grandfather, Nick Periscavis, the years of leadership while bringing in your own approach and voice? Because it's very, for me, it was really cool to see it. It was very nerve-wracking for me at first, obviously, because it's all I ever knew. But I, you know, I knew you and liked and loved you. And I was like, well, how is this? You know, for me, it wasn't me being nervous. It was like I was nervous for you, for all these older people who have only known a certain, I mean, Orthodoxy is already old. And now, you know, in our short time here on this Blue Marble, it's like changing anything in the Orthodox Church, you know, it could be someone moving an icon to a different place. It's like, whoa, that's going to cause. So what were your thoughts and feelings? Like, you don't have to get too personal, but you can if you want. Just like, how did you feel? I'll just say that.
First and foremost, Nick is my godfather, not grandfather. No worries. Just want to, I don't want people at the cathedral going, wait, I didn't know this. Nick had that since the mid 80s, over 40 years of directing that choir. And Nick Periscavis and our family go back to late 70s, early 80s, where his family was, when my parents moved down to Far Texas, that's where his family lived down there as well. And they were the original founding members of St. George's. I mean, through knowing them, that's how Nick and Lydia, his wife, became my godparents. So the first time I was approached about taking the reins, so to speak, there was a sense of, all right, let's go, let's do this. There, it really wasn't any hesitation on the, I don't know if I can. It was more of like how to do this in a very delicate way and to be smart about it. Because just like you said, over 40 years, this is the way that people have known it there. Moving an icon can cause an issue, right? To a lot of people, change can be a four-letter word. And change doesn't necessarily have to happen. But when you have a new idea and a new direction, there does have to be some type of change. Obviously, because I'm not Nick, and I direct a different style in a different way, as any director would. If someone else was directing El Tonto, it would not be the same movie.
Right.
Right? So that being said, I've tried, like I said, a very delicate approach to this, working with the clergy and the bishop there, and always, always making sure, no matter what I do, that it's always gone and talked with the bosses. The bishop is my boss, you know, and getting approval before anything. But a very baby-stepped approach of trying to form a rich, luscious cathedral sound. And what is a cathedral sound? Well, I think that is something that hasn't necessarily been preserved here in the United States in Orthodoxy, especially in the OCA. There's a lot of factors that can contribute to that. One of the big ones is communism. When that happened, we lost our connection to the motherland where we had everything from, you know, and a direct cutoff of that, of even musicians coming over, you know, growing that kind of thing. So you just had people who were there and present and that could do it, where, you know, overseas you have training academies to, you know, just to sing. We're here, we don't really have that approach, not just in Orthodoxy, in America, you know, of specializing at a very young age. So it was kind of this idea of how to reach out back to the past of high Orthodox cathedral sound while also being paying attention to what was established at St. Seraphim's and building upon that and growing something new out of it, and not necessarily making us an Russian Orthodox choir, right? Trying to have more of an American sound to it. Now, that does not mean that we're not doing the Russian music. We are in their style. But also, we are having new pieces being composed for us, you know, that kind of, I always tell Dr. Nick, everything he writes for us always sounds like, you know, Aaron Copland walked into an Orthodox church and, you know, decided to write 7- and 8-part music for it. And I really like it, but it stays true to what is that sound. And what is that sound? I mean, listen to any recording that you have of a professional or even non-professional Orthodox cathedral from overseas, that's the sound. It's big, it's luscious, it's vibrant. Because what is the difference of a cathedral than a parish? A cathedral has the seat, the cathedra of the bishop, which means more likely than not, he's almost always going to be there And when you have a bit for non-Orthodox people, when you have a bishop at a service, specifically the Divine Liturgy, that is the fullness of liturgy. When you don't have him there, you have a priest. There are certain things that aren't done because you can't do it without a bishop. The bishop being the high priest, when he's there, the fullness, and I don't mean that people who don't have a bishop at their church are not experiencing the fullness of divine liturgy. There's just certain things you can and can't do. And so having that there, you know, kind of elevates us up to it. We're not a parish level. We're a cathedral level. So we need to sound like a cathedral. Same can be said for when you walk into, you know, a Catholic church versus a Catholic cathedral. There's a stark difference in the sound and the musicology. There's an elevated thing. You know, to quote Archbishop Dimitri, the cathedral in Dallas, it needs to be the beacon on the hill, the shining light for the rest of the diocese to see the fullness of service. And the music is definitely part of that. I mean, in the Orthodox world, 95-96% of a service is music sung by the choir, where that kind of, you know, and other that's another thing that took me back when I went to a Protestant service. I'm like, you're only singing four things. What's the rest of the service, you know? That's so wild. It is. So it's a lot to have done, but what we've done is we've created a really good established core program with different directors who have smaller groups under them with rotating schedules as well. So the burden isn't just placed on one person. You know, there are five ensembles now at the cathedral that we've just kind of built from the ground up in the last year and a half. But like I said, it's great because you also have a diversity and blend of music and pieces being chosen. And, you know, you're not going to get the same thing every time.
Right.
Which is kind of the idea. Like,
yeah. I mean, at the cathedral, it's crazy because that's my home church. That's where the boys were baptized. And there's so many things that are added, right? Because the bishop's there. There's music that's added. There's, you know, moments that happen. There's the dressing of the bishop. And when you go to, and we've been touring other churches to talk about the film, and it's almost like I'm waiting for this thing to happen, and then they move along to the, and it's like, oh, wow, it's really interesting that it's the same divine liturgy, it's the same service, but depending on where you are, the music dictates, you know, the theme and how you feel. And it's really nice because it always feels like, even though it's the divine liturgy and parts are repetitive, the music's always different, especially like on a feast day, like we were talking about, or something different. And you guys have to be on top of that. So, I think you kind of touched on it, but, like, what's it been like introducing your own, not your own style, but in a way, your own style, like establishing a cathedral? Has it been difficult pushback, or has it been just normal, like what you would imagine?
There hasn't really been any pushback per se. I believe, especially with the foundation that Nick built there, there was really a hunger to do more, to do bigger. From everyone in the choir and people that we've, you know, recruited in since then as well, they want to be a part of this. They want to do something and do something special. There was a real big buy-in, especially in the early days. Now, of course, hesitation, first couple weeks, who is this guy? You know, he moves his hand a different way. He's giving a pitch a different way. I don't know about him. You know, okay, that's fine. That happens. That's normal. But like I said, the approach we have taken is, you know, kind of an elevated idea of, you know, we were here. Well, let's get to here. And what does it take to get to here? Okay, now we've gotten there. Next step. But the choir members want to be a part of that. And they really look forward to new challenges, especially in the music. And that's why we're always trying to add new music, because one, everyone can get in a stagnant, you know, repetitious loop of doing the same thing. We're singing the same thing here and same thing here, and you get boring and you lose attention and you go on autopilot. But when you're constantly adding new stuff and challenging them, it's really forcing them to think mm-hmm. a lot more and be engaged. And they enjoy it. And, you know, it's not like we're radically changing orthodoxy here. We're actually trying to reestablish traditions from the past 300 or 400 years.
Right.
And build that as our core. And then we can grow from there. But no, not pushback. I said there was an eagerness, a will, a hunger, a desire to do something, especially because we are the cathedral in the Diocese of the South. We do have a bishop all the time. So there was kind of this expectation, I would say, of bringing the level up, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
The time was right. So what's crazy is about the time you're doing these things, you're establishing an elevated style of services. You know, I come to you and I'm like, hey, I'm doing a movie called El Tanto Per Cristo, which was not really on my radar at the time. I had other projects that were fleshed out, ready to go. And this one was just, I was reminded about it, you know, 2 to 3 times a week when I'm staring at icons on the cathedral wall and I'm seeing things and I'm like, I've got to get this thing. I got to get this thing out of my, you know, out of my head and into the world. Mm-hmm. So what was it like? Okay, so you're doing all this, you're establishing things, and like, what was the process to kind of not pause anything? You added on top of to get the choir ready for the film, like, and how did you feel about all that? Like, I know the music in the choir, what you guys did at St. Seraphim and your direction, and then we mesh that with Michael Periscavis, your god brother. We're meshing those things, and then we're meshing the Polyphonic Spree choir on top of that. And, you know, but my favorite parts are when you guys come in. It just, you know what, it's like, just brings it back down and like solidifies it. So what was your process? How long getting the choir ready for when we did the live recording for the actual film?
So when you approached me, I remember, and I wasn't the choir director yet. So but before the final recording, I had just become the choir director. So, but it all happened in like a few months. It was insane. So when you initially approached me, you're like, oh, and you could sing this thing here and then just one thing here, there. And I was really thinking about it. And I was like, we're showing orthodoxy to a non-orthodox audience. One, two, there are going to be orthodox audience in English about an American person. This isn't Man of God. This isn't Ostrov, the island. You know, this isn't an ethnic Orthodox piece from a foreign land. It's an ethnic Orthodox piece for us in our native land. Mm-hmm. And my idea was, looking over some of the music ideas that you had, I was like, man, we got to go bigger. We're making a movie. We're showing a cathedral. We got a bishop. Let's boom. Let's blow this out. Let's, you know, let's have this be the taste. And so that's why I was putting the pieces and the ideas in there and, you know, like saying like, okay, Lord have mercy. Cool. We sing that 150 times a service. That's not going to latch anyone on. We need big music that especially hasn't been sung or recorded in English. necessarily brought over here. But also, I wanted to keep in mind that Orthodoxy is not just Russians. Mm-hmm. It's not just Greeks. It's not just Antiochians. It's not all the other ethnicities that I'm leaving out. I'm not doing that intentionally. Mm-hmm. But it's all of us, and it's all of our music. It's all a combination. And when you have something that is Orthodox, it means something different to someone who has a Byzantine background as opposed to a Slavic background and the music from that. So that's why I wanted to kind of have a combination there of high Russian music, Mercy of Peace, the Kedrov and Nafra, but then also put in there Ti Bermacho, the Kontakian for Annunciation, which especially to anyone from a Byzantine background and especially the Greeks, that is one of their most resounding hymns, because on that day as well, when that is sung, that's Greek Independence Day. There's a lot of things that fall into there, but you sing that in front of a Greek, they know exactly that hymn, and they're probably going to sing with it too because they've heard it all their life. So I wanted to have these ethnic Orthodox experiences as well, of anybody could sit down in this film and feel like that's a church. I recognize it. That's a hymn I know. Okay, this feels more at home for me, because if you go to, I live three blocks away from Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church. You walk into that parish on a Sunday morning, the liturgy is the same, the music's different. And that can be kind of off-putting if you're not used to or prepared for that. So I wanted the experience to be for anybody Orthodox walking into this, they see a church, they see a priest, they see a bishop, and they hear music that is home for them, so they can kind of feel comfortable and relax and, you know, maybe not critique it as much as some might have, like, oh, you know, they only did this music from this thing. That's not Orthodox, you know? It's like, well, it is, but
yeah.
We can kind of have this pan approach, and that's always kind of been my style of incorporating everyone's Orthodox experience, because it's different for everybody.
Yeah, it sounds, I'm excited for the world to see it. It sounds, like you said, it sounds so elevated. It sounds like something ancient, but it sounds very powerful. But it really, every time in the film, and it was always intentional, but really when you watch it, it brings everything back and it grounds it, because there's so much chaos that happens in the film. And when you hear the choir, it's just such a, and when Father John and the bishop are walking and it's the men's choir singing, that is, I get so much feedback from that, of like, people are just like, whoa, that is, because there's a lot of mystery to that, because you guys are singing on top of their dialogue and we bring their dialogue down. So it's just this choir singing, and it's something that I've always wanted to do in film. But you know, I wasn't brought up that way. And to have, you know, you directing and you bringing that in, it really encapsulates moments without having to tell the audience. They just let them feel it, you know?
Sure. Sure.
Let's see here. Music and inspiration. Are there any particular composers, hymns, film scores that have shaped the way that you hear or create?
So particular composers and hymns, I definitely am inspired by 17th, 18th, 19th century Russian composers. More currently, and obviously anytime we talk about anything in Orthodoxy, current can be as of 500 years, right? right. We're old. As of now, I've really gleamed on to, especially in my role as a cathedral director of music, we have 4, 5, sometimes 6 services a week. And how to mesh that out, how to make it work. What do we sing here as opposed to singing here? Do I need to save voices for this day? What singers do I need tonight? You know, it's, and so When thinking about that approach, I really look to the monasteries, especially in Russia, Belarus, Serbia, Ukraine, of what is the music they're singing? Because they're more than likely doing at least a matins in the morning and a vespers at night. A lot of them do a liturgy every day. How do those monks, and a lot of them are attached with seminaries, how do they do their music programs without being bored? How do they do it? You know, because there is a lot of repetition in Orthodoxy, you know, and a lot of people kind of get on us for that. And we try to remind them we're a Trinitarian church. So, you know, three times is, you know, kind of the magic number there, so to speak. But Archimandrite Matfei, he reposed in the early 2000s. He was the monastery and seminary choir director at St. Sergei Posad, where it's the Holy Trinity church there. It's a massive monastery. And he has this wealth of music that he not necessarily made up new hymns. He was taking the original hymns and chants and arranging them for his choir and his sound, but to do every day. And there's a simplicity to it, to where you're not straining your voice. You're not getting very tired up here. But there's an absolute beauty and depth to it. So Archimandrite Matfei is definitely one of my biggest influences, especially with what I have to do. Basically, any monastery or cathedral choir director, and they're usually the big names that come from the past, always looking to see their programs and how they set it up. But as far as film scores go, you know, I've never been that huge of, and this might sound weird, I've just never been that huge of like a film score person where I glom onto something. I like pretty much everything. Right. I don't think I necessarily have influences for music from that. I'm the dork that's looking up like, oh, there's a new pope. What are they singing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like sure, I'll look up masses and see, oh wow, the St. Peter's Basilica Choir, which by the way is excellent. They are a men's choir with a youth component, and the youth sing the higher parts, and then you have the men below it, and it's beautiful and it's perfect. Oh, wow. And it's in tempo and it's very regal because they have a bishop, right?
Right.
So I look, those are more of my influences, and especially Christ the Savior Cathedral in Moscow, which is the head of the Moscow Patriarchate, and how they do service, because they are a major cathedral, and all of pretty much you know, our rubrics kind of follow lockstep with the Moscow Patriarchate in the OCA of how we do things. So I always look to those as influences to see, especially because, you know, that cathedral could fit a lot of people in there. And how do they do services? Those are mostly my main influences. And I'm always using that for research to see what are current practices being done, what can be done, what's a good idea of, or like, ooh, I don't know if we necessarily want to touch that.
Right. Well, and piggybacking on that, in November, you'll be going with us to the Cuvadis Film Festival in Romania, and we're going to be surrounded by Orthodox churches and monasteries. Like, what are your thoughts and feelings of bringing this film to a place that has known Orthodoxy and is surrounded by it? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are you excited to take in, like you said, since you're so inspired by different types of sounds that are, you know, put together? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm really excited. I'm not nervous at all because I don't have to do anything. except show up. Michael is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. From my understanding of everything that he's doing there, and Godspeed to him, that's an endeavor. And I'm excited to see how everything that he did for the music and that the Spree did for the music and that Nick Periscavis did for the music and I did, how he's going to put that all together in a live experience that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, so the people that don't know is Michael, they've asked him to do a live conducting of the film's soundtrack and score with a Romanian orchestra, right?
Yeah. It's similar to the Lord of the Rings tours that they do where they show the movie and have a live orchestra and choir sing. It's going to be the exact same thing. And I'm very thrilled to see what he's going to do with the arrangements that we came up with. I'm nervous and not at all. I think that's going to be so much fun. And then also just being in a country that, you know, kind of means something special in my heart, because my dad, after he became Orthodox and the wall fell with communism, he did a couple mission trips to Romania and it always had a special place in his heart. In Bucharest and in Cluj, doing his mission trips there. So Romania has always been very special to my family. So this will be my first time visiting, and I'm definitely looking forward to being in the services and visiting the monasteries and hearing new things. I've always tried to draw inspiration on visiting churches in foreign lands, especially where they've been Orthodox since, you know, maybe 1,000 years, and hearing what they're singing and how they're singing it, and maybe possibly incorporating that into some things that we do at the cathedral, because there is not one way to do Orthodoxy.
This is true. You know, what's wild is I didn't think a couple years ago that I would be putting out a soundtrack score with the Saint Seraphim Choir and you as the director, and then taking this film to Romania and then Michael performing it. And the cool thing is, this is not the last time we're going to be doing this. And me and you will talk more, because I got two or three more projects that are Orthodox inspired films that is going to need you and Michael Periscavis. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for you and for this St. Seraphim Cathedral Choir, and just in general music and what we're about to do creatively.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for hopping on here. This was a blast.
Absolutely.
I know more about you now than I did an hour ago. All right, buddy. Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
I will see you Sunday. And then I'll also tomorrow. See you at the October 6th premiere, where your music and Michael Periscavis and Nick Periscavis' music was going to be released on vinyl for the first time. I don't know when the last time an Orthodox song or choir has been released on vinyl. Maybe the 70s. Ever.
Or some of that St. Vlad stuff, maybe. Yeah. But there's someone who knows better than I do on that.
So we're officially putting our stamp on this earth.
Literally. Yes.
All right, man. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.